Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 217 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of August 31st, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is crunchy digitized voiceover Dan Ryan.
So very crunchy.
Ah, the Genesis. Summer's pretty much done. Not that the temperature outside agrees, but so is our summer series, which is exactly what we're going to be talking about today. Before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@ek.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello because we always want to hear from you, the listener. For example, we got an email from Ferg, from the host of the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast, one of my favorite podcasts, one of my favorite people, and an excellent baker. Dan?
An excellent baker.
He is. We had his challah bread. We hollered about it.
You certainly did. Would you like me to read the email, Chris?
Yes, please.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the kind words for my podcast on your last episode, which I enjoyed very much. I feel compelled to answer your question about my own vacation games since you asked. I got Coleco's Electronic Quarterback when I was 8, so that would have been the first game I took on a car trip. Usually I brought books or my tape recorder with a hard plastic earbud, only one, mind you. We never played board games in the car. We could have, since we weren't wearing seatbelts then. At my cousin's house in the 70s, I remember playing Pong in their basement, which was the first time I had seen it in person. That was also where I received the Atari VCS for Christmas in 1980. I guess that was a vacation. Aside from going to places like Fun Spot, nothing really sticks out for me until I got a DS when it was new. I brought that with me on several vacations with my wife. Normally I get up earlier than she does, so I would have something to occupy my time. A few times we had to travel for her work, so while she was out, I spent most of the days banging my head against the wall in Phantom Hourglass or realizing that my Super Mario Bros. 2 skills had gone down the toilet. These days I have an Atari Flashback Portable, so I bring that on vacations and work on my podcast when I have some downtime. In closing, I do love Monopoly very much, but no one will play with me. Thank you.
Dan, I think we need to meet up with Ferg and play Monopoly.
I would totally play Monopoly with Ferg. When we drove down to Florida, we listened to a bunch of Ferg's episodes that I had like backlogged, and he's just such a damn joy to listen to,
isn't he? Though
I love listening to Ferg talk really about anything, you know, and half the games that he mentions are things that I'm only vaguely familiar with, but man, just if you are not subscribed to the Atari Game by Game podcast, you absolutely should be. Ferg is one of just the genuine nicest people on the planet,
and
deserves
he'll read,
your subscription.
Just like we read almost everything on the show, he'll read everything you write him, or he'll read it on the show. And it's always an odd thrill when I write something in, like I'll talk about a game I know about or have a memory about, and I'll be like, "Ooh, I want to send him a voice clip," and he'll play it on the show. It's just a wonderful time. So thanks for writing in, Ferg. We really appreciate your story of vacation gaming. But Dan and I, as you have noticed, are back from our vacations. We are both, well, I'm sure we were both well-rested when we got back from our vacations.
But yeah, I wasn't, but, you know, that's
well, yeah, you
really
were on vacation
how
with your kids. I actually, Karen and I got to go on vacation without the kids, and that was pretty outstanding.
I mean, how fucked up would it have been if I was like, "All right, kids, mommy and daddy are going to Disney World. Deuces!" Like, that would be really, really mean.
it definitely would.
It would be so not cool.
All right, I have a ton of game stuff to talk about because I've had a very interesting, I guess, month of gaming behind me since the last time we recorded an episode together. What about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I didn't get a chance to play, virtually anything, on vacation apart from, Puzzle and Dragons, obviously. So my time has been split, since we've been back. My time has been split really between a new game that I downloaded on my phone and Guacamelee 2.
And excellent.
Guacamelee 2, I do not want to go too much into this week because the game is still just a week old at this point, and I don't want to really spoil anything. I am like 5 minutes away from the final boss fight, I believe. Suffice it to say, it is just as charming, just as fantastic, just as gorgeous, chock full of all of the references you could possibly want. It is just phenomenal.
Does it deserve to be Guacamelee 2, or is this more of a Guacamelee 1.5 situation?
I believe this is this deserves to be a 2.
Feels like a sequel, not just an enhanced upgrade or something like that.
It does. It does. That's they've added some things to it. The abilities that you have in chicken form are greater than what they were. Which adds a whole bunch of interesting new and quite challenging, to be honest, platforming segments. They've done a lot of really cool things with the platforming this time around. Like, you played the first one, right?
Yeah, I haven't finished it, but...
Okay, so you at least got to the part where you could switch between the light world and the dark world?
Yeah.
Right, on the fly? Okay, right, that's pretty early on.
I got decently far into it. The problem is that I had it on Wii U, and I didn't have the easiest time playing games at that point.
Sure, sure. Early on in it really does. Early on in Guacamelee 2, before you get the ability to swap back and forth, because like any good Metroidvania sequel, you start off with none of your powers. So before you get that ability back to switch between the light and the dark world, there is a section in the first like little temple area that you're running through where there are waves of the dark world floating by like in a timed pattern, and as you're trying to make your way platforming through the level is changing as these waves kind of float through it, which like it was just really cool and interesting and really hard. Like the first time, you're just like, fuck, I just want to change. I could do the thing. I did the thing before. I could do it. Just give me the goddamn power, you know? So like there's some just some of that, but just really, really well done. The writing is somehow even more self-aware than it was the first time, and that's really, really funny. It's just fantastic. The other game that I've been spending time with is an iPhone app called 80s Mania Wrestling Returns. And
was it called 80s Mania Wrestling Returns for Dan Ryan?
I think so. Like, they really did make this game just for me. You get to be a booker, basically, and like run shows and sign wrestlers and, you know, pick who's going to do a mic spot and pick the matches. And there's all this stuff to unlock, and none of it is licensed wrestlers at all, but they are all throwbacks to very 80s and 90s pop culture references. Like one of the openers that I got, because like your wrestlers are broken down to where you would put them on the show. You have openers, you have jobbers, openers, mid-card, upper mid-card, main events, and then legendary wrestlers is what I've seen so far. So one of the openers that I have that you would, you know, typically book in like your first or second match of the night is his name's Keith Blood, and he looks just like Kiefer Sutherland from The Lost Boys. I have a jobber character named Mandonna. It's just a dude dressed up like Madonna. Like, there's obvious send-ups of like The Rock and Ric Flair and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan, and I have Starboy and the Piranha, who are very obviously Starman and the Amazon from NES, you know, from pro wrestling. There's so many cool things in this game, and it there's not like, you don't play any matches, there's none of that stuff. It's just a basically like a resource management sim in the world of wrestling, and it's super duper cool. The last thing that we did spend some time with that Tiff just reminded me of was Knowledge is Power, which was a free game that was given out with PlayStation Plus. It is a British quiz game where anybody who has a phone or a tablet or whatever can play the game. Like, that is how you control it. And you pick a character and you answer trivia questions based on, like, pop culture and history and sports. And it's set up like a game show, like kind of a cheesy game show. There's like a silly host and all these different categories to answer. And as you're going throughout the games, you can do different things to, like, fuck with your opponents. So, like, you can cover their answers in gloop. So you have to, on your phone, you have to swipe away the gloop before you can see what the answers are. Or there's another one where it, like, encases it in ice. So you have to, like, tap it 3 times to break the ice first, and then you can click your answer. And you get points based on, obviously, if it's correct, and how fast you answer. It is way more fun with more people when Tiff and I play with each other. It's just like, well, I'm going to cover your answers in gloop, because you're the only person here. You know, but, like, we played with, you know, my mother-in-law was down, and we were over at my sister-in-law's house, and a bunch of us just sat down, and, you know, my mother-in-law just took out her iPad and logged into the game, and, like, we're just all playing this game around the TV, and it was just really awesome family gaming that's really silly and fun and, you know, has some elements of strategy to it, and... Yeah, like, you can just sit and hang out and play a quiz game, and it was really awesome. And if you don't have PlayStation Plus, the game is, like, $10.
Neat.
Yeah, it's a damn good time.
I like quiz games. I wish I had more people to play them with.
This is great.
We downloaded Use Your Words a long time ago. That's a really fun game to do in a group setting. But alas, we haven't been able to play it since because it's just Karen and I. And when it comes to those kinds of games, it's just like, well, playing them two player, like you just said, is a flawed experience.
It is. It's not ideal.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's cool. All right, let's go. Let's head back a few weeks because I got to do some super fun things. So, went to Long Island Retro. And we did our panel, which was an absolute blast. Long Island Retro was a really fun show to do. The show floor was pretty packed with some awesome stuff. I was eyeing up a copy of Ninja Gaiden for Master System.
Mm.
They had a boxed copy of it there. And
somebody, I believe, just wrote about that on our website.
Sure did.
I don't know who that could have been.
Someone dashing.
certainly.
I had wanted to pick it up. I wound up ultimately not because it was more money than I wanted to spend while I was there.
What were they asking for it?
I think it was like $50 or $60. It was a really good deal.
That's not terrible.
No, not terrible at all. It was a really good deal. It was just I kind of didn't want to spend more than like $20 or $30 because money was a little tight that week. I was at the show with our friend Mike Sheridan, and it was his first game convention. He had never been to a show before. So he wound up picking up a handful of interesting things, including a light up sign with the Castlevania logo on it.
That's cool.
Absolutely awesome. This one table had them. They had a Nintendo one that I almost bought, and like that would have been my thing to bring home. But the guy standing next to me bought it before I could.
Aww.
That guy standing next to me was Craig Incirillo from Game Crazy.
Really?
Yeah, my old district manager.
Well, that's odd.
He bought it, and I was standing there just thinking to myself, like, damn, I really wanted to buy that. And then he's sitting, you know, he's paying for it, and then I'm looking around at other stuff, and I start eyeing up the Ninja Gaiden, and I just hear, Chris? I'm like, Craig? The hell? So that was neat. What I did wind up picking up, if you remember, we did Long Island Retro a few years back, and I wound up picking up an R-Zone XPG, the R-Zone handheld thing that doesn't strap to your head.
Yeah.
And I bought it from this guy who just, I don't know, I was talking about, you know, stupid stuff for our panel, and he showed me that, and I wound up going back and buying it. After the panel, because it was more than our $20 limit.
Right.
So I'm looking around for something to buy, And I walk past this table, and the guy behind the table is like telling me, like, "Hey, you want to pick up this stupid thing?" And he was like, "Show me this stupid thing." He's like, "Come on!" And you know you want it. I was like, "Well, I don't even remember what it was." I said, "Well, I like stupid stuff, but not that much." And he said, "All right, well, how about this?" And he pulls out I can't remember what it's called. It's sitting in my closet right now, and I could go get it. You know what? I need to. Hold on. One moment. Dan, vamp.
Certainly. I'm really not gonna... This is just gonna have to get edited out, and Evan's gonna be all mad about it. It's all good, though. Currently vamping. Vamping hard. Like Vampirella. Pretty ridiculous.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, I vamped hard.
Good, good. All right, so... Mike also, by the way, Mike bought me a copy of Ninja Brad Man for the Wii, which is something I have wanted for a long time. It's supposed to be an absolutely terrible game.
From what I understand, yeah.
I think it cost him all of $5, so nice. I'm very happy to finally own that. But yes, so this guy said, "Well, do you have this?" And he pulls this little thing out called the Tapwave Zodiac 2. And I'm a game system I've never heard of. That's not something that happens every day.
Tell me more.
This is a Palm Pilot that actual games were released for.
Really?
Yes, indeed. It is from a company called Tapwave.
Sure.
And it is called the Zodiac 2. It looks like it's got an analog stick, a home button, a power button, and four buttons that look almost like a sectional D-pad on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a stylus, and he sold me the Tapwave. I haven't been able to turn it on yet. I don't believe there's a charger. but he sold me the carrying case, the Tapwave, and a copy of Z-Pack Adventure and Spy Hunter for the system. This carrying case, by the by, is a Tapwave carrying case, and the slots that hold the games do not fit the games.
Naturally.
But it does hold the stylus, which also clips onto the back of the system. So I picked up a game system I had never heard of before.
Well, that's super cool.
It is, and if I can turn it on, that would be even cooler. But I don't even know how I'd begin to turn this on. It doesn't take batteries. It just has some sort of like internal charger thing. What's neat though is that this on the back says Tapwave First Edition, but on the front it's called the Zodiac 2.
Sure.
It's the first edition of, you know what? It doesn't actually matter at all. Because I now have a Tapwave Zodiac 2. I think he sold it for me like $30. The fun part of the story is, after I bought it, he was just like, "I knew you were going to buy this." I was like, "Really? How did you know I like stupid things?" It's like, because a couple of years ago, you bought the R-Zone XGP off of me for the same reason. I was like, son of a bitch. It's the same guy. And he totally remembered me from years ago as the sucker who bought the R-Zone from him. So he knew he'd be able to sell me this thing he's been trying to unload for years.
That's awesome.
So those were my pickups from all the Long Island Retro. I really wanted to buy more, but I didn't have infinite money. That night, I crashed at Mike Sheridan's house. Mike Sheridan has an Xbox One, and I have finally played Cuphead.
And what did you think?
I freaking love it.
It's so good.
It's so much fun. It looks and plays just exactly as I imagine. I don't like the Xbox One's controller.
No, not at all.
Not really. I'm so used to now the PS4 and the Switch controllers, and I don't really care for the Xbox One's controllers. But man, I wish this game was on Switch, because I'd love to have it just with me everywhere I go. It's one of those things I'd like to just, because the levels aren't super long, you know, I could just play a level for a minute and then that's my, you know, that's my 10 minutes on my break or something like that. It's so perfect for it. I'm so bummed that it is six Xbox exclusives because it's so good.
It's going to, at some point we will end up with like the sequel or some special version of it.
I have to believe that. This game is too big, like, you know, for a game that Microsoft didn't actually make, this game is too big to be that, you know. That studio has said that they own that IP. Microsoft doesn't own it, so there's no way this isn't going to go multi-platform eventually. But it's just such a shame, because you know this game would do so well on PS4 and Switch.
It really
would. Just no question about it. It would go extraordinarily well. So that was nice to finally be able to say I've done that, you know. Mike's house seems to be a great place for me to play games I had no opportunity to play before. That's also the place I played Street Fighter V for the first time and only time.
For the first and only.
And I just didn't love it, but we've talked about that. Cuphead, I absolutely loved. I didn't want to leave. I was playing it the morning I had to go home, and I was like, man, just one more level. It's so good.
Just one more.
I beat the carrot boss. That was fun.
Nice.
That was super fun. Great game. Let's see. I finally finished Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon. Did you play that?
I have not gotten to that yet.
You should. It's great.
I'm sure it is. I want to play it.
It's unabashedly Castlevania. Like, it's,
which is great.
Damn near copyright infringement.
That's fine.
Yeah, no, I'm great with it. It's absolutely awesome. I mean, geez, have we even had a chance to talk about the Smash Brothers thing at all?
What was Smash Brothers thing?
The Simon Belmont being in there? Have we recorded an episode since that happened?
Nope.
Oh my god. Alright, well, alright, I finished Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon, which is basically Castlevania, a new NES Castlevania game, and it has a lot of replayability. A lot of really fun tricks. The last boss was a complete pain in the ass, but I'm really glad I played through it, and that was great. I'm assuming, have you seen any of that Smash Brothers direct footage? I know you don't care about Smash Brothers, but have you seen any of that stuff yet?
Not very much. I think the news broke when we were on vacation, I think.
Gotcha.
And I just didn't, like...
I just need to send you the videos. I mean, you just need to watch the trailers. I know you're not going to play the game, because really, what the heck would you even care to? But,
well, I will, because my kid wants it. So
that's true. The trailer with so Castlevania's and Smash Brothers, which
basically everything we've wanted this whole time.
Oh, it's like now the only thing left for me is Ninja Gaiden, and then every major Nintendo like NES era property is there and represented, like all the big heavy hitters. But seriously, Simon Belmont looks perfect. We got Simon Belmont and Richter Belmont as playable characters,
which is awesome.
Richter's an echo of Simon. You should see just the way they made him walk and it's so, remember, you know, you remember how they did with the Mega Man sprite? They basically took the Mega Man sprite and made it a 3D model. That's what they did with Simon Belmont. So he stands in that same beefy position. He has the same walk, but the trailer is amazing because they straight up kill Luigi,
which is awesome.
And death does it. Like, Luigi's walking around in Castlevania with his Poltergust 3000 and, that he eventually, you know, he comes across Medusa, he comes across the mummies, and then he eventually runs into Death, who just like takes a swing and rips his soul right out of him, and that was crazy.
Great though.
Oh my god, that whole Smash Brothers Direct knocked my socks off. It was like everything that they didn't do in the E3 one, because the E3 one was just like, everyone's here, and that's really cool, and look, but there was, and it was very clearly stated, this is not a port, but, and like, I knew it wasn't a port, and it kind of cheesed me off that other people said that it was, it's just a port, it's an enhanced port. It's like, nah, it really isn't. Look how much work went into this. If they had showed this information at E3 instead of what they did at E3, like if they swapped these two, there would be no question that this is a new game, because they went through all the crazy stuff that they're adding to this. Like, God, there's over 900 songs in this game.
Which is nuts.
It's absolutely bananas. There's over 30 Castlevania songs in this game. The Castlevania stage has Dracula in it. It has Dracula is like a stage hazard, plus like all the bosses from the first Castlevania will like show up as like stage hazards. So like Medusa will show up and start floating around, or Frankenstein's monster and the Flea Man will show up and do shit. Like, it's ridiculous. The Castlevania coverage in Smash Brothers is so crazy. And they announced Crumb from Fire Emblem as an Echo Fighter, Dark Samus as an Echo Fighter for Samus from Metroid Prime. Dark Samus looks really cool. And then they closed it out with King K. Rool from Donkey Kong Country. Which made me just do cartwheels, because not only do I love King K. Rool and I love Donkey Kong Country, I know it's something that people have been asking for ages, and I love just what they did with the trailer, because it was such a troll. It was such a freaking troll. It was so ridiculous. Because I was sure that they weren't going to do it. I was sure there was no way they're not bringing back King K. Rool for this. No chance. And so it was like kind of the one more thing. Sakurai is saying a bunch of stuff at the end of it, and you just hear these thuds. And as he's talking, and then it fades out to black, and then it shows this really cool, really, really cool imagery of rivals fighting each other, like Meta Knight and Kirby, and Mario and Bowser, and Ridley and Samus. And then they go to Donkey Kong, and he's chilling in his treehouse. And I'm looking at it like, what is this? What are you doing? And then you hear the thuds again, and they both look, Donkey and Diddy look out the window, and it's the silhouette of King K. Rool. And I was like, no, they didn't. They actually did this. And then they pan, just like, they don't really pan away. King K. Rool's costume comes off, and it's freaking King DDD from Kirby. And I was, and he just starts cracking up, and I'm like, oh my God, they actually... Sakurai is going to get murdered on the street. Like, yeah, somebody's going to kill him. Because I was sure when that happened that was where they were going to end this. Like, it was some weird ending prank. And then the actual King K. Rool comes up behind King DDD and just beats the shit out of him. And this crazy rendition of Gangplank Galleon starts playing. That's it's like a mariachi cover of Gangplank Galleon, which they later posted an extended version on the Smash website. That so not only is it a mariachi version of Gangplank Galleon, but it also has like a rap segment in it,
which is fantastic.
Oh my God, it's amazing. You gotta hear it. It's just ridiculous. David Wise approved of it. I follow him on Twitter, and somebody asked him about it. He's like, you know what? I never imagined it with a mariachi band and rapping in the background, but hey, it sounds great.
But why not?
Why not? So yes, that reminded me of all the Smash stuff, and I've been writing a whole bunch of crazy Smash Brothers stuff on the SAG blog. So if you want to hear me pontificate more about Smash Brothers, that's where to go. Okay. All right. Let's see if I can blow through more of this stuff. I went on vacation with Stone Age Gamer, and I got to visit their store, which is absolutely incredible. I took a video of it that I'm going to send over to Dean to try to edit and put up, because I just kind of went on a little tour. There's a great video tour on their Facebook page, but I got to go into the basement and the attic. Basement was where they make the EverDrives, which was really cool to see. Like, they got all these like workstations put together where they take the shells and they drill holes in them and they add the labels and sand things and paint things. And that was really cool. The attic though, just completely knocked my socks off, because the attic is like, I cannot believe how much product they have. I cannot freaking believe it. There's just this actual avalanche of controllers and systems. That's just like there. Behind it's this giant mountain of things in front of these shelving units that are just, I mean, I'm talking about like 40 or 50 PS1s, 30 to 40 PS2s, just chilling there. A stack of NESs as high as my head, more Ataris than I've ever seen in one place at one time before. I'm talking like at least 50 Atari 2600 units just stacked. They have an absurd amount of product. I can't believe they have so much stuff. It's absolutely crazy. If you're in Ohio, anywhere near Salem, you've got to visit this store. It's just nuts. And they have a lot of really cool stuff downstairs too. And they also, in their back room, they have a bunch of pinball games, because not Ryan, Andy. I think Andy is a bit of a pinball enthusiast. So he's just got a bunch of games back there that, I mean, I don't think they let customers back there, but one of the games that was back there was Black Hole, and I'd never seen that in person before. Mm-hmm. I've only played the virtual version. Man, that machine is awesome.
Is it?
I didn't really get why it was such a big deal in the pinball arcade. Like, I felt like that was one of those things that was like, wow, we got Black Hole. This is such a classic cabinet. But because I'd only played the virtual version, like, I thought it was neat that it had this second tier to it that you could go and basically play upside down. Like, that was neat, but boy, that thing in person is just a really beautiful cabinet with, like, all these different layers of clear plastic and whatnot that make it look, like, really 3D. It's a wonderful machine. That was awesome. One of the highlights. But when we were on the actual vacation, we went to Cedar Point, which is, like, this roller coaster park, and they had mm-hmm. this giant arcade there. That's not great. it's a humongous
it's
arcade.
Big. But shitty.
Most of it's broken. They've got all these like ancient pinball tables against the wall. None of them work. Every single one has an out of order sign on it because they're freaking ancient. And I mean, like, they don't even have like any sort of screens on them. They're like really, really, really old pinball machines. I don't know why they're there. they clearly will never ever work again unless they ghost. Like, these need to be in a museum kind of things.
Right.
But one of the things I didn't expect to run into there was the arcade Luigi's Mansion game, which I kind of forgot was a thing. That's interesting. I didn't know that it was like a rail shooter, like House of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit in this booth and you pick up an actual Poltergust. And what you do is you're walking along and it's all first person, just like House of the Dead, and like ghosts will pop up and you have to press a button on the top of the Poltergust to stun them, like that flash of the light to stun them. And then you pull the trigger and it starts the vacuuming. And once you mm-hmm. get your vacuum stream going, you have to actually move the pull the Poltergust back to try to like suck them in, just like you do in the actual Luigi's Mansion game. It's a really neat premise. I don't think it works extraordinarily well. Like, it didn't feel as good as I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. It's by Capcom, which is something I didn't realize, and it's also not as good looking as I would expect. The graphics are like, you could see the polygons in Luigi. You know, it didn't look
really
like PS1 era, but it certainly didn't look up to snuff with even I would say even the GameCube Luigi's Mansion.
That's really weird.
It was weird. It was almost like they had built it on an enhanced version of the 3DS games engine or something. It was very oddly low tech looking. Not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but not what you would expect from a game in arcades that came out in the last year or two.
Yeah, that's very odd.
Very odd indeed. But it was still a really fun experience that I'm glad I got to play it, because I didn't think I'd ever get to play that game. I didn't even know it was in America. I thought it was Japan only, but what do I know?
Not much.
Did you see, did you get around to playing Owlboy? I forget.
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't finished it yet.
Did you see that Chrono Break thing that they did?
No.
Oh my God. So the creator of Owlboy, apparently something he likes to do in his spare time is make trailers for games that don't exist.
Oh, wait, no, I did read about this. Yeah.
He made an absolutely incredible Chrono Trigger sequel trailer that looked like it was like young Magus or Janice running around with an old Luca.
Mm-hmm.
The sprite work is astonishing. I was heartbroken. It doesn't exist. It will never exist. It's not a thing. It was just like that. On Twitter, it's like, look, this doesn't exist at all. This is something I like to do for fun, is make trailers for sequel games that don't exist. He's like, this is not endorsed by Square. I'm not making a game. It's just this trailer. And
it's just me dicking around.
I nearly cried. It's something I want so badly. It looks so good.
Yeah, well, I mean, the people behind Owlboy are very talented.
And it's done in Owlboy's art style. So it's like those character designs, but with the same visual sensibility as Owlboy, which is very pretty.
Yeah.
So,
I did read about that. I didn't watch it, Because I did not want to ruin my day.
Yeah, it was somewhere between, like, I was so happy and so sad. It was just, it's absolutely stunning.
It was very Jesse Spano of you. You were very excited, but very scared.
Yes.
Saved by the Bell? Nothing?
I know who Jesse Spano is. I'm not getting that exact reference.
Really?
My
when Saved she by gets, the... she gets all hooked up on goofballs and...
I remember that episode. I don't remember...
I'm so excited.
I guess I don't remember the line.
I'm so scared. This is awesome.
Your Saved by the Bell knowledge dwarfs mine.
That's about all I got, though. I mean, you could pop out a reference from a different thing, and I'd have to be like, yeah, I suppose so.
Have you ever seen I think it's a YouTube series, Zach Morris is Trash?
No.
It's fantastic.
I want to see it now.
It's amazing. They just go through episode by episode of why he's like the worst person ever.
That's fantastic.
It's so great and it's so true. I never realized when I was younger, but wow, Zach Morris is Trash.
He is just a horrible, horrible human being.
Like, all right, seriously,
Chris,
awful.
We got to focus.
We got to focus. All right.
We got to focus. It is.
It's getting late. I figure we can do the summer series right after the break.
Okay.
I got a few more quick things that we absolutely have to talk about.
And Saved by the Bell is not one of them.
Saved by the Bell is not one of them. All right. There's a lot of great stuff happening on the Switch right now. There's like a handful of really high profile games. Hollow Knight just went on sale. I already missed the sale, so I didn't pick it up. But Kiro Blaster came out, and do not sleep on this game. It is the next game from Daisuke Amaya Pixel, the guy who made Cave Story.
Oh, okay.
It's great. I'm at the last boss right now.
Nice.
It's got the same exact soul as Cave Story. It seems like it's a little dumber at first, but I was completely incapable of putting it down. It's like, it doesn't have, it's basically plays the same way as Cave Story, except it doesn't have any of the exploration elements. It's all focused on telling an oddly touching story similar to Cave Story, and the combat, the jumping and shooting, which is great. It sounds great. It looks very Cave Story-esque, except this was originally designed as a mobile game.
Okay.
And they didn't really scale the graphics the way that you would expect them to. Like,
sure.
they look blown up because it's the same basic aspect ratio as the mobile port. So it's like, you know, when you play a Game Boy game on your Super Game Boy, and it's like, you really notice how much closer the camera is because the sprites have to be bigger.
Right.
It's kind of that in a slightly off-putting way, but the game's $10. I highly recommend it. I don't know what other platforms it's on besides mobile and Switch, but don't sleep on it, because I know everybody loves Cave Story, and Cave Story is a freaking phenomenal game, and this is his next game. Like, this is the game he did after Cave Story, I think. I don't think there was anything really in between, and it's got the same weird, you're a frog, and you work for a cat, and there's these little black cloudy monster things that you have to go and essentially clean up. Like, they're just like, these demon thingies are just kind of haunting everything. You should probably go kill them for us. And
yeah,
so they just send you out
sense.
There with a gun. But one
naturally.
Of those nasty black things is like your cat boss's pet that's like slowly eating her or something, or possessing her. And those black cloud things are physical representations of your bad memories or something like that. It's very strange, but it's really endearing. I absolutely love it. It's a great game.
All right.
Okay.
Then.
Quick down the list. Windjammers is coming to Smitch. Smitch.
Windjammers
is coming. Good old Smitch. Windjammers is coming to Switch. So I'll finally play that game. I've never played it. You've played Windjammers?
Yes, it's awesome.
I've heard it's awesome. Monster Boy has a release date, November 6th. Buy Monster Boy. It looks incredible. Speaking of Monster Boy, the people that did the Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap remake that I would not shut up about are making Streets of Rage 4.
Because why not?
Oh my god, I'm so happy.
Yeah, I know. I saw that and I was like, are you, like, that's amazing.
I just it, the art style's taking a it's weird seeing Streets of Rage in that art style because it's the same feel as Wonder Boy,
right.
And that was a fit like a glove for Wonder Boy. But I feel like after I get used to looking at it, because like it's objectively beautiful. I just think
it
it's
is objectively
wonderful.
Good looking.
It is absolutely awesome. It's just so strange seeing Streets of Rage in that art style because it does clash with the original's aesthetic, but it looks great. It looks awesome. It looks a hell of a lot better than Double Dragon 4.
That is most definitely true.
They don't know what platforms it's going to be on. I'm assuming it's going to be on everything because Wonder Boy was. They haven't announced that Yuzo Koshiro is doing the soundtrack, but it would be weird if he wasn't. But holy crap, Streets of Rage 4 is happening. And I keep seeing all these posts online like, how are like we in this crazy 90s Sega era where all these great Sega franchises are back and Sega has little to nothing to do with them?
I know. It's so sad.
Streets of Rage is back. Toe Jam and Earl is back. Wonder Boy is back. I'm sure there's more that I'm just forgetting. It's just hilarious to me. And the only other major thing, the most important piece of news to talk about, earlier today, there was a Nindies Direct.
Mm-hmm.
And during that Nindies Direct, a game that is currently called Untitled Goose Game was announced.
Which is big fucking news. You know how I feel about Untitled Geese, Chris.
So, I'm assuming you did not see this.
No.
This is a game where you are a goose trying to fuck up everyone's day.
That sounds awesome. I'm in.
It is a stealth game where you play as a goose and, like, did you look at the trailer? It's just like, this is Peaceful Town and you were an awful goose and like there's a bush there and the goose head pops out of it and you walk up behind this dude and go, honk! And he drops his hat and then you run and steal his hat and run away.
Yeah, I fully support everything you just said.
I am so sold on this game. I can't freaking wait.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a segment where he steals someone's lunch. Like, the point of the game is to just piss people off as a goose. There's not a honk button.
The point of the game is to just be an absolute shitty goose. And I love everything about that.
The tagline, I was just on their website, Untitled Goose Game. It's a lovely morning in the village, and you are a horrible goose.
That is an excellent, excellent title. Or an excellent tagline, I mean.
I mean, like, there was a handful of stuff in this, like, they announced a date for Undertale. I'm going to buy. I'm really stoked to finally play Hyper Light Drifter. I heard that game's great. Mm-hmm. But I remember after one of the last Nindie Directs, I left absolutely in love with The Messenger, West of Loathing, and Bomb Chicken.
Right.
I have now played and beaten Bomb Chicken and West of Loathing. They're everything I wanted them to be, and Messenger comes out in 2 days, which I've already pre-ordered.
Is that the ninja game?
Yeah, that's the ninja game. That
I'm excited about that one.
There was they were at Gamescom, and the director of the NES Ninja Gaiden and the sound composer went and played the game.
That's awesome.
And they did it. When the guys found out that they were playing their game, they sat them down for an interview and they were talking about how much they loved it and they were really excited about it and can't wait to play more. So that's really awesome. Exciting. But yeah, so of all the things that were announced in this thing, like, yes, I'm excited for Hyper Light Drifter. Untitled Goose Game left me absolutely wanting more. That is my game of today. That made me so happy.
One last thing before we go to break. Did you happen to make it up where, for those of you new to the show, we are a Northeast-based podcast. So did you, Chris, happen to make it to the Franklin Institute for the Game Masters exhibition that they had?
I did not.
You didn't miss much.
Yeah, I heard very conflicting things on that. Ferg went. He put out a bunch of pictures on his Facebook. But
yeah, I took the family. We all went. The four of us went this weekend. Katie got to play a bunch of Sonic games, and she was super excited about that. Penny got to solve a real life Tetris thing that she was super excited about. So all of that was pretty cool. The coolest stuff that they had, well, like, and see, the exhibition is closing. It either already has closed by the time this goes live, or it's closing in like 3 days from when this goes live. So if you're listening, go to Philly, go to the Franklin Institute is cool anyway. You can go like crawl around in the heart and all that's fun. A bunch of the, so when you first walk into it, they have like an arcade setup, and it kind of goes from like Tempest up to like shit. I think like Virtual Fighter was like the newest arcade game in the timeline that they had set up there. But like Defender was broken. And I was like, well, fuck, man. Like, that sucks. You know, I want to go play Defender. And like some of the Arkanoid style games, like the trackballs, like these games had just obviously been abused over the last 4 or 5 months, however long this exhibition is going on. Like, stuff was looking in disrepair. But what was super cool is they had a bunch of different focuses on creators. So they had a bunch of the Sonic Team stuff there. They had a bunch of Blizzard stuff there. And they had, like, original artwork and storyboards and different stuff like that, which was all really cool. But there were two that stood out. There was Tim Schafer, and they had a bunch of the original artwork that was done for Psychonauts and stuff for Grim Fandango and stuff for Full Throttle and stuff for Brutal Legend. And they also had Tim Schafer's his job application that he sent in to Lucas Games at the time, which was a... it was a visualized text adventure of him getting a job at Lucas Games. It was incredibly Tim Schafer and incredibly charming and very cool to see his actual job application that got him started in the industry. That was super cool. Along with like all the concept art that was there for Psychonauts. And you could, you know, if you've played the game, you could see where things were changed or, you know, like, oh, like, I see that character, but they tweaked it a little bit, and the storyboards of, like, the opening sequence of Rasputin, like, coming in as the counselors are talking and all that. Very, very cool. But they also had game design documents and original concept sketches for Shadow of the Colossus.
Hmm.
And that stuff was super cool to look at, and some stuff for Ico as well, so you could see, like, the game design sketches of what the character would look like pushing on a block, and some of the original Colossi, like how they were originally thought about, you know, from the guys over at Team Ico. So all of that was very cool. I don't know that it was necessarily worth an additional $30 on top of a Franklin Institute ticket, which is, we just buy the family pass. I don't know how much it is, but I think it's like $40 or so. So like, $70 to go see it. I don't know that it was worth it, but it's kind of cool that we have reached the point now where we can have these sorts of exhibitions and all of this stuff can be on display. Like, if you were a Sonic fan, you could go in there and you could play Sonic 1, and Nights into Dreams was there, and Sonic Forces, you know, the latest Sonic game was, so you could kind of see the evolution of a development team and a studio and where their ideas went. And it was all just, it was pretty cool. So I'm glad we went. I would have been pissed if it would have been, you know, what is $280 for us to get in if we would have spent 70 apiece, but
yeah. I was just, it was one of those situations where I was like, Franklin Institute. I wonder if they have anything there that I don't have in my basement.
No, they didn't. That was the first thing Tiff said when we walked in. Because of course there's like a big line and stuff, like we didn't play Miss Pac-Man because there's a big line obviously for Miss Pac-Man. You know, we did play Wild West, I think was the one where like just an old arcade game where it's just you and another person and you like your two gunfighters come out and you just have to shoot each other and you each have 6 bullets, like played that against the kids, and like that was kind of cool, like to see them jump in and be like, all right, first of all, what the fuck is this looks like shit, And then all of a sudden, like, they're having fun with it, you know? Like, Katie and Penny both did pretty well in Asteroids. Nice. You know, and, like, trying to see them figure out, like, okay, this doesn't look like video games, because to them, video games look like Five Nights at Freddy's or Hello Neighbor or Roblox or, like, whatever nonsense they play. It's like, what is this vector shit? Not sure we're into this. But yeah, like the first thing Tiff said when she walked in, she was like, I'm not waiting in any of these lines. We can just go play this shit at home. It's like, it's fair, you know. But you won't get the full experience.
True.
So anyway.
It was all cool. Right. That was a nice report. And I'm glad you got to talk about it, because I was really curious about it. But, you know, my kids wouldn't have gotten anything out of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ellie would have just been like, rah, because she's one. And John would have been like, okay, but I played Pac-Man this morning.
Right. Like, I played it in the car on the way here.
We play retro games all the time, so.
I'm not impressed. Oh, look, there's a tablet set up with Minecraft. Like, ooh.
Yeah, he's still not into that.
I don't know. They did have, like, a big Just Dance station set up, and, like, people seem to be digging that. And, like, there was a focus on that game company, so they had, like, Flower and Journey.
Okay, that's cool.
So, like, that was good. Like, it was a really interesting showcase, and they had some local developer stuff there that I just did not have a chance to really spend any time with. But it was cool.
Oh, so. one last thing again before we go. One more last thing before we go on break.
That's right.
I did get to play a little bit more of Horizon the other night.
Mm.
I can confirm that I am very bad at it.
Do you get the PlayStation Zelda vibe from it?
Not really.
No? Okay.
It's really feeling to me very intrinsically different from Breath of the Wild. I mean, I did finally get to be adult Aloy, and I'm right at the beginning of being adult Aloy. I was interrupted, unfortunately, with other stuff, but I'm running around, and I'm surprised that dude didn't die. So what's your mentor or whatever guy's name? Like, you wake up for the day of the thing that you're going to do to try to find out who your mom was or whatever, and he's not there.
Bob. I forget. It might have been Bob.
He's not there. And Diane. I'm immediately like, that guy's dead. This guy doesn't have a very strong personality. He's extraordinarily important to you on a personal level. Right. There's no way he's not dead.
There's no way they haven't killed him.
And I just walked over. I was like, oh, he's just standing on a cliff. All right. He's just hanging out waiting for me. Okay, cool. I'm still confident he's going to die at some point, but.
Oh, sure.
It is, the stealth stuff. I am just not great at. I'm not really getting a good handle on it. Because when I was still the kid and I had to rescue that dude, like right in the beginning, I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm looking around and I was feeling confident with myself because I only died twice doing that, which I don't think is something you should be doing. It's like a tutorial thing. I don't imagine a lot of people died there, but I died twice.
You're really
and I was feeling pretty
to.
Good about myself only dying twice. So now I'm out in the world and I'm like, all right, well, now I'm grown up Aloy. I gotta be a relative badass. Let me go find some stuff. Great. He sent me out to go find those like fire arrow things.
Yeah.
And so I go down to the field. I'm like, I got this. I can project that guy's path. Cool. I know where he's going. And then the one I didn't see behind me just up and pounced me and killed me. Cause it's like, oh, I should probably look around me more.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a thing you should do.
Yeah. I'm not good at it at all, but I did fight my way out of a couple of different positions. And that's kind of, the big difference between this and Breath of the Wild is Breath of the Wild, I feel, is a lot more gamey.
Okay.
It seems to be a lot more focused on, like, if you want to do stupid stuff, you can do stupid stuff. Like, this game really seems, it takes itself very seriously, and it's to its credit that it does. But, I mean, like, right from the get-go, if you want to go fight a giant monster with a twig in your underwear, you can.
You absolutely, yeah.
And, like, it's just a very different kind of ridiculousness. You need to play that game as much as I need to play this game. I am very impressed by it. I will say that Yeah, because you know I don't play a lot of games like this. I've never really played much of anything on PlayStation 4. The visuals are throwing me off quite a bit because are you familiar with the phrase, the more you clean, the more you realize you have to?
Yes.
This game is absolutely gorgeous. So when there's a crack, you know, when you start to see the seams, it's so much more noticeable. Like, mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild has a very simple art style, and so the cracks are all over that game, but you almost don't even notice it because, you know, it's just that's kind of what it looks like. But this game, like, if there's a texture popping in or if there's just something... Young Aloy's face was really bothering me. Like, it just didn't seem like it fit on her head. There's, like, every now and then there will be, like, a screen tear or something that's just like, wow, I can really notice that. And, like, I remember playing through Doom, and that kind of stuff didn't really... I didn't really notice that kind of stuff. And I guess because Doom is a much more contained experience, you know? This is very open. There's a lot more going on. But whenever the cracks show up in this one, they seem really, really apparent to me and just kind of very briefly take me out. But on the opposite side of that, when I'm in... I'm just in utter awe of the way this game looks.
It's just stunning. I haven't noticed a lot of those cracks playing it on the Pro.
I was just going to say, you played it on a Pro, so yeah. You're probably not seeing the same stuff that I am. It's unfathomably gorgeous. And it's playing it, it makes me wish that Breath of the Wild looked a little bit more like that. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for the next generation of Zelda game to look closer to that. But, cause the level of detail is absolutely astonishing. I need to find more time to play it because I'm really enjoying my time with the game. I'm just really bad at it. It's so freaking complicated too.
Yeah. There's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, like the crafting and like the different wheels and like, all right, you hold down this button and then press this one while you're standing on your head and then flip the left trigger and click these two and then press that and you can make six arrows.
Yeah.
Like, huh. Okay. I will not remember that.
I think that was one of the things I had mentioned when we talked about the game at our end of the year show last time of like, I hope that is something that in the future is streamlined.
Yeah, that's one thing that I will say. About I kind of feel like it's a very un-Nintendo type thing. You know, when you jump into Breath of the Wild, everything that you do seems pretty straightforward. Like, this is what you do, this is how you do it.
Right.
And then this game kind of tells you everything. It's like,
right.
And now you have to do this. Like, early on in the game, I got to a wall and I couldn't figure out how to get up top. It was like, you're the dude that I'm following. He jumps on top of this thing. He's like, all right, follow me. And I'm like jumping against the wall. Like, why won't she climb? Nathan Drake would have this scaled in like a heartbeat. What's going on here? But there was like this little tiny rock sticking out that I needed to jump on and grab onto. And I didn't even think that I would need to do that because I'm now used to other games where that kind of stuff is so just natural. Like, you need to scale a wall. We're just going to let you scale this wall instead of you have to find a rock to climb to scale this wall. Little things like that. I love it, and I can't wait to play more of it.
All right.
Now that we've caught up on what Dan and I have been up to for the last month, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about our Summer Series games, which should be fun, because they were very interesting. You're mm-hmm. listening to the Stone Age Gamer Podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, if you can believe it, Chris and Matt are still, 13 years later, talking about Smash Brothers music. If your taste for Smash Brothers characters runs towards those that are prehistoric, Simeon, or Pink, you're in luck. Your hosts enter the cuteness zone by taking a listen to Smash Brothers tracks connected to the ape responsible for Mario's first appearance in video games, Mario's dino pal, and a big pink blob who knows how to eat and has nothing to do with Mario. Don't miss the Wave Back Podcast, Episode 62, Super Smash Brothers, Volume 5, Donkey Kong Yoshi Kirby.
Good old Donkey Kong Yoshi Kirby.
It's my favorite character. It's his first name, Donkey Kong, last name, Yoshi Kirby.
Yoshi Kirby.
Yes, Mr. Yoshi Kirby?
Hmm?
Next, summer is almost over, so get it while it's hot. The latest entry in Dan Ryan's summer series, Kung Fu Fridays, pairs a game and a film that are both the best versions of themselves, arguably. Find out why the Master System version is arguably the one you want to play and why the director's cut of this week's movie warrants a closer look at the three-hour-long epic in this week's Kung Fu Fridays, Ninja Gaiden, and A Touch of Zen. Karen wrote that commercial. I did not agree with your assessment that the Master System Ninja Gaiden is the best Ninja Gaiden.
That's because you're wrong. It's okay.
That's because Ninja Gaiden 2, the Dark Sword of Chaos for the NES, exists and is a vastly superior game to the Master System Ninja Gaiden in every way.
There is not a Ninja Gaiden 2 on the Master System, Chris. I said it's the best version of Ninja Gaiden, not the best version of Ninja Gaiden 2. Jeez, dude.
Good save.
What I meant. Finally, Trish Reyes' coverage of... Finally, Trish Reyes' coverage of the latest season of Venture Brothers is still going strong. Show continues to reach back into its own past to connect dots you didn't even know were there, and this week's revelatory roller coaster and follow-up to a season one episode is no different. You'll need a guide to help you keep it all straight, so why not turn to ours, which is clearly the best. Check out Spoiler Brothers, Arrears in Science.
You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at Geekade.com. And we are back. Welcome back.
Welcome back, Chris.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Dan.
So this week, I don't know how I feel, Chris.
Did you beat either of these games?
No.
Me neither.
No. Got a hell of a lot closer in Metal Storm than I did in Pulse Man.
Well, I'm pretty sure Metal Storm is like one third the length of Pulse Man. There's a lot more Pulse Man than I expected.
Can we talk about Pulse Man first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I hated that game. Like, I don't know a lot.
This game does not work.
No, it's...
I liked a lot of the ideas.
Very hard to play.
But the notes that I wrote down, this game needed an intro level.
Absolutely. To explain to me what the hell my powers are.
Glad you're saying that.
When I hit A, why do I just go and have a little seizure for a second, which is weird.
I wound up eventually watching a video of this game after I decided that there was no way. I beat the first three stages. When it opened up to the next set of stages, I just kind of gave up. There was just no way I was going to have that kind of time.
I only got through like India and USA, and then I gave up. I honestly gave up because I was so fucking frustrated.
You wind up doing some cool things, but none of the abilities you have in this game are intuitive at all. And that's a major problem with this is that. So this is Game Freak before Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
And Pokemon works so much better than this game because Pokemon is, it's menu-based, it's an RPG, but, as a platformer, this is just not it's just not intuitive. There's nothing that makes the things that you can do in this game seem natural, and you don't feel good when you do them. The idea of what you do, that you move around to get the kinetic energy to shoot your little arrow, like magnetic arrow thing, whatever the hell he crunchy says in the crunchy Genesis voiceovers. And that little like turn into a ball of electricity and zap around the room. Like those are really cool ideas for game mechanics, but, it comes down to being very similar to Rocket Knight Adventures, and Rocket Knight Adventures does those same things infinitely better.
You know, yeah, you don't have to charge up your shot in Rocket Knight Adventures. You always have that little, you know, laser shot coming out of your sword, but it's a very similar process to, it's a very similar attack to what Pulseman does. And the, you know, flying around in a, you know, just bouncing off of things in a straight angle is, again, similar to what you do in Rocket Knight, but it's also handles so brilliantly. You hold down this button and then you let go and you do it. And in this one, it's to get into that little ball and bounce around it, it just doesn't. For as much time as I put into this, which was a decent chunk of time, I put like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours into this.
Right, to only be three levels in?
Yeah, because
I just... That's not good.
The mechanics never felt good to me. I never felt like I was doing things the way they were intended to be done. You know, like you beat a stage and you go to those bonus stages and it's like, all right, break all the blocks. And there's like a little rectangle with a lightning bolt on it. And I had just beaten the stage and I still had no idea how to turn into that ball and bounce around. I did it accidentally a couple of times. And like, so I'm standing around zapping myself and I'm not doing anything. And it says no bonus. And I'm like, well, screw you, game.
Yeah.
There's the core. I would love them to make a sequel to this game.
Because I would love somebody else to make a sequel to this game because the character design is awesome.
It is. Here's why I want them to make the sequel, because they have gotten so much better at making games since this. Like,
well,
when they took a break
making turn-based RPGs.
No. They made Harmonite for 3DS.
That's true.
And Harmonite was great, and it was intuitive. It felt good. It looked good. It played good. It wasn't, you know, super simple. It was, it had a fairly complicated list of things to do. You know, it was like playing a rhythm based auto running platformer that you had to, instead of just collecting things, you had to hit things. Like it was a very interesting game. I really, really, really liked that game.
Tembo the Badass Elephant 2. Is that them?
Oh, that's right. They did do that. I never got around to playing that.
That game's fun. I like that. There were just some choice, like you were saying, of you have to run around to charge up the electricity to fire the shot, like that should go away. It's just fun. I get the idea. Exactly. It's not fun.
It's a neat mechanic on paper, but they didn't really take into consideration whether or not this game was fun to play. This game is very cool, but it's not fun.
Also, I also watched a video playthrough of it, and my God, there is a lot of stuff going on. The seizures that this game would go, like, there, a lot of times, like, games don't get released in America for, you know, a myriad of reasons. And, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was this whole thing of, like, animes that were not getting released in this country because of the different visual standards that media has to adhere to in this country versus other countries. This game made me appreciate the fact that we have those higher standards of media required, because I couldn't fight. Like, I'm watching a video and I felt like I was about to have a seizure and die.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on.
So many blinking lights and strobes and flashes and colors and stuff swirling all the fuck around. Like, there's that one boss who is like the sphere, and like he's like morphing the screen as he goes. Like, really cool ideas, but oh man, it, like, I found the game to be almost unplayable, and I'm so bummed by that because I was so excited for this.
Me too. I owned this game. I bought it when it was released on Virtual Console and never really spent a lot of time with it because I figured the few minutes I sat down and played with it, I was like, all right, I just need to learn this game. But now that I sat down and actually tried to learn it, it's just not well done.
It's just not fun.
I understand why it has a fan base, because it is cool. It is unavoidably cool, but it very much drips from that 90s Sega mentality. I mean, this was a Sega published game, but this game really needs to be redone. Somebody needs to take this and give it a remastered treatment and make it fun to play, because all the building blocks are there. It just needed somebody to stop them and say, you need to make this better. Like, you just need to make the actual gameplay better, because once you do, you've got a winner on your hands.
Oh yeah, you know? Without question. Like, it is. And I think that's what makes it so much worse. It's like we've talked about with, like, Justice League and Suicide Squad. It is just left of amazing.
Exactly. It's just left of amazing. That is perfectly said.
That's what I do, Chris.
It is what you do.
So Metal Storm.
Hmm.
I love this game. It's so awesome. Hard.
All right.
It's so hard. I do, like, it's something that modern gamers, people who grew up, like, after 80s and 90s, like, if you did not grow up on Nintendo and Genesis and Super Nintendo, one-hit kills fucking suck.
It sucks
so bad. And I don't even want to
get there yet, right?
Okay.
See, here's the thing about Metal Storm. If you look at this game, like you look at the cover, Metal Storm, this is just like, wow, this is going to be badass. Like, look at this mech that's on the front.
Such a cool looking mech.
This looks absolutely awesome. You fire up the game, you got the title screen, like this is going exactly as you expect. And then you start the game and the music's just like, da-da-da.
I love the music in this game.
This extremely kind of happy, really chill music.
I love it.
Threw me off completely.
Yeah.
It's a great tune, but it does not match what's happening on the screen even a little.
No.
Now.
And then you look at your mech, Chris.
And then you look at
your badass mech. Mm-hmm. And it's beige.
It is beige, which doesn't really bother me much because, you know.
It's just so funny.
It is absolutely hilarious. Why is your
mech beige? Are you fighting in sand? It doesn't make any sense.
Didn't even matter because it's so well animated.
The animation is so smooth on your character.
But so I start playing this game and I'm you know, just running forward and jumping. And what I didn't realize at first was that there's this whole separate mechanic where you can reverse your own gravity a la VVVVVV. And wow, that's really cool.
But unlike
Pulse Man, this game is as complicated as Pulse Man.
Yeah.
But everything feels natural and it does it with one less button.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything about this game feels absolutely natural. You have the weight that you would expect from this carrot, from this giant mech that you're walking around with. You know, it has just a bit more weight than something like, you know, controlling Mario or whatever. It's almost like, you know, how Donkey Kong has this very different weight than, even though you can still, you know, move in midair and all that stuff, there's just something about the way the character moves that feels heavy. There's something about the way your mech moves that still feels heavy and bulky, which is cool. You know, you've got your attacks, you've got this gravity reversing mechanic, and then in addition to the gravity reversing, like once you reverse gravity, like all your jumps and stuff kind of work that way too. So it's, and when you reverse gravity, everybody else reverses gravity too. So if there's like a dude on the ceiling, you reverse to get up on his level, he's just going to go right down to the floor.
And your shots like go through the bottom of the screen and come back out the top.
Yeah, that's like kind of neat that they start working with a lot of that looping stuff because the level designs are really crazy in this game. Like this whole game is weird. But like you mentioned before, this game has these one-hit kills. And again, this is something else. This is in Pulse Man too. Is that Pulse Man is very unforgiving with how much health you have.
Yeah,
it's a game that requires you to learn it first, and that is something that I don't love. Metal Storm is a very well put together game. Like if this was a game that gave you three hits until you died, it would be damn near flawless.
It'd be the greatest game of all time. It would be like the Nintendo game
because it would be so much more approachable. Because it's absurd to me that you are this giant badass mech, and if you so much as walk into something else at a very slow speed, you just fucking explode.
Yeah, yeah. But that was game design then.
Yeah, but it wasn't good game design then.
No, it wasn't, but it was certainly very, very common, especially considering the developer of the game, Irem. You know,
yeah, they're coming off of their games shooters. like R-Type. I didn't really think of that. That definitely pairs a lot better with the kinds of stuff that they were doing. But in an action game like this, you know, the analog to something like this is something along the lines of Mega Man, where you have a health bar.
Right.
And I'm not saying that this is the kind of game that would require you to have like a health bar, even a health bar similar to like DuckTales.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like it's three hits and you're out. But this game requires it so that you can actually get through it in some sort of reasonable capacity, because you know, the first two bosses were pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But after that, things just go bananas. Like, well, there's these really complicated things, yeah, that patterns that you need to learn, and it's very difficult to. I don't want to complain about it being too hard, because it's not that kind of hard. It's tedious.
Yeah.
You know, I like this kind of difficulty, but there needs to be some sort of give so that I can learn these patterns. It's one of the reasons Mega Man works so well. You get to one of those bosses for the first time and you don't have the right weapon to kill him. You just have your Mega Buster, and then you keep fighting him. You keep taking hits because you keep learning the pattern, and that's how you learn.
Yeah.
But in this one, you just keep dying, and if you die too many times, you've got to play the whole damn level again.
Yeah, which is just not ideal.
Exactly. It stops being fun at that point, and that's one of the reasons I didn't beat it. I did go back and watch a full playthrough of it and was just in awe of how crazy this game is.
Yeah, it gets pretty nuts. The one of the most fun levels in the game is the auto-scrolling level. Like, it's very, very tough, but it's very, very fun. Mm. You know, it is one of those games, like, unlike Pulse Man, like, no matter how good you get at Pulse Man, it's just not very fun to do the stuff busted in that game. As you get better at Metal Storm, the game gets more fun.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine mastering this game. Having had mastered this game would be fun. Mastering this game did not seem like fun to me.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to do that.
It does suffer from some of the problems that that games back then suffered from, like screen flicker. And when there's screen flicker and there's a bunch of shit going on and I die in one hit, that's kind of not fair.
Yeah. Like, that's just not fair. Fun. You but know, like, you know, the screen flicker, I got, it was one of the ways of attempting to prevent slowdown. And sure, really, the visuals is one of the things that I can't really complain about in this game.
Oh, no, it looks
the
great.
Art direction I can complain about a little bit, because similar to Pulse Man, the backgrounds in this game are just like, where the fuck am I?
Yeah, generic sci-fi background. Like, oh, look, it's green and
there's
looks
crazy
somewhat techno-organic.
Things. But what's nuts about this is all the parallax scrolling. In
so
level one, you're walking and there's like, oh my, what? Why? What? This isn't something that happens on the NES very often. Like, yes, the sun stood still in the first level of Rygar, but like, besides like, I can think of maybe a small handful of NES games that used parallax scrolling like this. And I hope I'm using that term correctly. It's when the background moves slower than the foreground.
Yeah.
But in level one, you just get that right off the bat, and I'm looking at it like, wow, this is some advanced shit right here. Like, mm-hmm, this is Mega Man 6, Tomahawk Man stage stuff going on here. This is impressive for an NES game.
It really, really is.
Yeah, you know, like the last boss in Kirby's Adventure did it. It was very, it was not a technique that was used very often in NES games.
It was something very that showed resource up in, intensive and took a very talented team. And Irem didn't really make bad games.
I would agree with that. I can't really think of a lot of their games besides R-Type.
You know, but the R-Type games are some of the very best shooters that have ever been made.
I mean, without question. R-Type games.
You know, no. So when you look at the pedigree of the publisher, you know, again, like I'm happy that we did these two games this week, because I feel like they are just polar opposites of each other in about every single way possible. You know, here you had Irem, who had a pedigree of just incredibly well received and well made games, and then you had Game Freak, who would get that pedigree much later on. You know, it's just kind of interesting to see these two companies at different stages.
See, now I'm looking at their list of games, and yes, they did R-Type, but they also did Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
And
which
that's not
great.
That's an amazing game, but it's definitely not a one hit kill. I'm angry because they should have known better.
Yeah, this game really should not be. Should not be a one-hit kill game.
It shouldn't be this frustrating. It shouldn't be worthy of being played at the pain in the ass-a-thon. Like,
yeah, and it really would be.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, this is a pain in the ass. And that's unfortunate, because outside of that, just the one-hit kills really just trash this game to me. Like, I'm not, when I say trash, I don't mean like it makes the game bad to me, because everything else it does right enough to make it totally worthy of the, you know, the following that it has. Mm-hmm. But God, if you just had three hits, if you just had you know, there doesn't even need to be health pickups. You have three hits to get through the level. That's the end of it. Like, that would have been fine. Even that level of difficulty would have been like, I can see myself being able to do this.
Right.
Rather than it just being this incredible mountain of just like, all right, I'm just going to keep pounding away at this until I learn it. Yeah. It, at some point that stops being fun, you know, especially at our age when we have lots of other shit to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it, yeah.
But yes, this was a really interesting combo of games to go through, and I'm so glad you felt the same way about Pulse Man, because I was afraid I was coming in here and you're gonna be like, yeah, I beat Pulse Man, it was great.
No, not even a little bit. Like I said, I really did. I got through the first two stages and like was doing the third. I was like, I'm just not going to keep doing this to myself, because I'm not having fun.
It's no Karnov, but
like, I don't know that it's that much worse than Karnov. Honestly, I don't.
Karnov
like
was so much worse than this.
Or that's what I meant. Like, I don't know that Karnov was that much worse.
Karnov was a similar situation where it was like, this is a really neat idea, but like the mechanics weren't even sound. We were just like, Karnov is a cool character in a cool setting. Pulse Man is like, man, if somebody would just have nailed the, you know, the actual feel of this game, that would have been great. And Pulse Man has a lot going for it. Karnov was just trash.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Just trash.
Yeah, I would, out of this week, I would, you know, and we've run very long, so we're not going to go through the, you know, rating it out of 10 and whatnot. But I would say just overall, play Metal Storm, skip Pulse Man, just watch a video. Have a seizure.
Yeah, I mean, if you have an opportunity to play Pulse Man, like, just try it out just to say you did.
Give it a couple minutes.
Yeah, give it a couple of minutes and then understand what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And if you think that we're genuinely wrong, please write in and let us know. I'd like to hear a defense on Pulse Man, because Dan and I seem to agree. Great idea, not a great execution. That's Metal right. Storm, absolutely amazing game, just frustratingly difficult.
Love
for the
Iron.
Wrong reasons.
We will, at some point, I will do a whole feature on beat 'em ups, because at some point, our website needs to cover Ninja Baseball Batman, which is one of the greatest things ever.
That game's awesome.
It's so good. It's Irem.
I did not realize that. Also, yeah.
Ninja Baseball Batman is incredible. And anyway,
that's our show. Let's call it a night, Dan. Surprise, Dan doesn't know what we're doing next week until now. Join us next week when Brett Weiss is coming back to the show. Yes, I spoke to Brett while Dan was on vacation. He wants to come back on the show to talk about his new book, the Super NES Omnibus, which includes writings from me, Dan, Dean, and a bunch of other people who are actually famous for real reasons.
And he wants to give us free copies. That's awesome. Well,
I have a copy, but I bought it.
I know.
Did you buy one?
No.
I bought one. I read all your stuff. It was very
I'm
nice.
Going to. I just haven't yet.
It's huge.
Oh, I know.
Physically much larger than I expected.
Yeah.
But really cool book. So yeah, we'll be talking to him next week. That's going to be fun. It's going to be a hoot. So once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris. That's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, where can the good people find you?
@GeekadeDan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. We'll have a link to his websites on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, and his own website. I lost my spot. Sorry. Links in show notes. Anyway, remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.